Is Anderson?
Yes, half 11.
Okay, cool.
So don't look so horrified to see me.
But no, I'm just confused.
No, did I not put it on loop? Yeah,
I think he made that. He announced it in the assignment.
We probably didn't give a time. Okay. Yeah, sorry about that. You're stuck with me for about an hour, so then Anderson will show up.
You don't want to be too sensitive.
Never. Okay, so as indicated by that discussion, we're going to have a short lecture today. We're going to wrap up with the cellular implementation, just giving some real highlights of the evolution from this basic GSM system to an LTE advanced type system. And with a lot rolled, as time goes by, pretty much everything rolls over, but I think you can understand it pretty well in terms of what's changing at any given point in time. Okay, so just to recap quite briefly, we said that what we had last lecture was a really brief overview of GSM, so we dipped into a few details, but again, it's a very complicated full telephony standard, so we really only dipped in. But we said that the goal was to provide circuit switched voice connectivity. Okay. And this was an improvement on providing circuit switch analog connectivity. It allowed for better use of your spectrum. And we looked at the basic architecture, which where you had the BSS, which essentially provided the wireless access point into the network. And then these connected back to the MSC, which managed, again, all the networking functions, connectivity back through your telephony network, and so providing end-to-end connectivity and not just the point-to-point. Okay, and then, of course, you have to manage it all, so you have some sort of management system hanging off the side. Okay, and we noted that the data sent, it was either control data used to manage these connections, to set up and manage these connections, or actual data, so think of it as your voice data, and that this was all sent over basic physical channels, where a physical channel was a time slot plus a frequency. Okay. And so in order to understand or know what was going on in what's being sent in any given time slot, they were divided up into logical channels. And what you saw was, in a fairly complicated but cyclical pattern, you would know on each channel at any given time what was being sent. Was it a control signal? What sort of control signal? Or, was it data? Okay. So, again, the whole goal of that was to send a digital voice signal, so a voice stream. Now, at some point, computers, became popular, and you had this second source of digital data, your packet data. And so, the question was, can you send packet data over this sort of a network? And the answer is, how efficiently can you do it? Okay, so the first obvious answer is, you just send your packet over your circuit switched over your circuit. And, of course, you can do that, but it's if your data is bursty, it's not an efficient way of doing it. Then, okay, well, maybe we need to actually include some equipment systems for explicitly handling packets. Okay. And so the goal of that was to move towards 3G systems where you would have sort of a reasonable data rate being transmitted over your telephony network. Okay. Now, the first cut at this was what can be called 2.5G systems, which those of us with gray hair in the room will remember Edge and GPRS and those sorts of systems. And again, their goal was to, with minimal modifications to GSM, be able to transmit packet data in a reasonably efficient and inexpensive way at the time, a reasonable data rate. Okay. So what we'll do is we'll have a look at those sort of transitional systems. And the conclusion eventually was, you can go so far with that, but what we really need is, in particular, new air interfaces, so better ways of transmitting our data over that initial wireless link. And so, moving from a fairly straightforward evolution, we come to UMTS, where again the key differentiator probably is the change in these air interfaces, while keeping sort of the back end reasonably stable. Okay, and 4G sort of moves on in that vein as well. You improve the air interfaces again. So you can get very high data rates out of your air interfaces. So again, the first initial wire radio link. And it also moves to sort of tidy up the architecture. There's a lot of complaints that the UMTS architecture is fairly complex, bloated, and trying to do lots of different things with a bit to do each one. So LTE tries to streamline the back end then as well. So, again, our 2.5G systems are, they're building on top of 2G and trying to send packets over 2G systems. Okay. And, again, the first attempt was a circuit switched attempt. So you created a circuit and transmitted your data over that circuit. Your data rate then is essentially, if you give, say one channel, your data rate is going to be limited to the voice stream data rate. So in order to increase our data rate, we can assign multiple channels to a single connection. Okay. So again, if you had a voice stream, you're essentially taking up one channel. And now we'll just take up several of these channels, up to 8 of them, for sending our data. Okay. So we still are creating an end-to-end link. So again, if your data is bursty, that's not going to be efficient, and we're going to charge you for that link, or however many links, however many channels that link uses. So it's going to be inefficient and expensive, but you can get slightly higher data rates. So you can get tens of kilobits per second. Okay. And so it's an expensive and inefficient solution. And additionally, during hand, you can have experience issues during handover, because if you, say, are taking up your full 8 slots, then those slots have to be available. That number of slots has to be available in the cell you move into as well. And so there was a significantly higher probability that your connection was going to get dropped as you tried to hand over. Okay. Now, GPRS was the first significant attempt to distinguish the handling of voice traffic from packet traffic. And so in particular, we'll now try to allow the user to send packets without having to establish your circuit switched end-to-end connection. Okay. And so we got it improved the data rates, so you're up into hundreds of kilobits per second. And so the goal was to do that while sort of in parallel almost with your telephony, your voice functions. Okay, so it's to keep your infrastructure fairly much the same, but you know, allow this packet handling. So it's an overlay of GSM, so it's a few additional bits added to GSM, and we'll see what those bits are in the next slide. It doesn't require a circuit to be produced to send your packet, so you can just send the packet and it will be processed by the system. And from a user point of view, that's very nice, because the company will now only charge you according to the data you send, not according to this connection you set up and then may or may not be using at any given time. Okay. And also from the network perspective, it's good, because you know, again, it's a more efficient use of your network resources than setting up a connection that isn't necessarily used, so you can allow the users to do more things. Okay. So, again, the main addition is elements to handle packets. So they don't exist already, so you need separate elements that are going to handle your packets, and sort of again in parallel with the existing elements which are handling our voice connections. And so we have the GPRS support node to do that packet handling. And it breaks down into two portions. They're serving GSN, which handles the packets within the cellular network. And then the gateway GSN, which will forward the packets out of the network. Okay. You also require, again, something at the base station to differentiate between the voice traffic and the packet traffic. I mean, if it's still receiving digital data, but it, should, it needs to distinguish between voice and packets. So, again, we see that with relatively few changes to the existing network and no disruption to the voice component of that network, we can add packet handling features. Okay, and so this seems to be a repeat of our discussion of GSN. So, again, we handle the packets within the cellular network and forward them then out of the cellular network. So, just the picture probably says it better. Your user, your base station controller now has a separate unit for handling packets, and again they go not to the MSC but to the SGSN, and again out to data networks. Okay. So, we have to, again, have some policy for transmitting those packets to and from the cellular network. And as we said, we don't want to set up a complete circuit switch to do it. So we'll do it in a statistical multiplexing fashion. Okay, so we will try and share the resources amongst the users as they need those resources. And so, again, the point-to-point connectivity exists. So it's a frequency and time slot. But now we share out those channels amongst the users. And when you think about it, the directions are not equivalent. Okay, so in the downlink direction, so from the base station to the user, obviously the base station has complete control, has complete knowledge of the channel usage, and so it can just schedule that, okay? And so it schedules the downlink in a first-come, first-served fashion. From the user perspective, well, they don't know what channels are free, so we'll have a contention-based period during which users request request a channel on which they can upload their data. Okay. And so, again, the LoHa is just a slotted LoHa. It's a CDMA type protocol, contention-based protocol, by which users can send their request. Once the request has been received, again, after this contention period, then the base station can indicate their channel allocation, what channel they can then upload their data on. Okay, so again, that in that way they can send data in both directions. Okay, in terms of the channel structure, it's similar to what we saw before for GSM. We just, for most of, the control channels that we defined for GSM, we now have a packet version of those control channels as well. And we can allocate multiple time slots to a given user. So they need to have some combination of frequency and time slots allocated to the user to transmit their data. Okay. The resource allocation lasts for the duration of a packet transmission. Okay. So if you have a stream of packets transmit, you're redoing that every time. The system gets to decide how the packet allocation is, how the resource allocation is going to happen. And, they can take priority into account, they can take load into account, they can take sort of what the data is intended for into account, and come up with whatever sort of scheme they want. Might just be first come, first served. Okay. And again, we have our logical channels, which are similar to the GSM, but just with packet versions. Okay, so that GPRS continued on with again, attempts for higher and higher data rates. So eGPRS, which is an implementation of Edge, attempted to improve the 2G, the GPRS data rates. And essentially it did that by changing the modulation schemes, so allowing multiple bits to be sent per signaling element. So you triple the data rate by sending 3 bits per signaling element. Okay. It becomes, as your data rates are increasing, it becomes more important to sort of monitor the quality of the channel. So again, we'll allow rate adaptation algorithms and coding adaptation based on the quality of the channel. So the better quality, the more bits you try and send, or the higher bit rate you try for, and the lighter your coding scheme is. Okay, so we've seen that, we saw that before. Okay, so we've again improved our modulation. So we use 8 PSK or 3 bits per signaling element. That triples our data rate. Again, as long as the channel conditions support it. We see
some use now of frequency hopping. Okay, so attempts to again choose channels that are for which they choose channels over which the conditions are better rather than worse.
Okay, so again, we adapt to our link quality. We saw this, where did we, I guess so far we've seen it with .802.11, our Wi-Fi system, so it's the same idea.
But we have two possible modulation schemes and 9 coding rates, and then we can do different kind of combinations of those. Okay, so what are the modifications with respect to GPRS? Well, again, it's the air interface has changed slightly, so you have to change your equipment to be able to receive the signals encoded in this fashion, modulated in, and encoded in this fashion. Okay. So, these sorts of systems that were just essentially built on top of GSM and within the same spectrum as the original GSM came fairly close to satisfying the data rates required for 3G, but you know, it was sort of clear that they weren't going to go much farther than that, that you weren't going to be able to keep squeezing improvements out of that same basic setup. Okay.
So 3G said, well, we need new air interfaces. New air interfaces means that we need a new spectrum. So a new spectrum gets allocated, and we try and, you know, again, see what we can do with the interfaces to, again, provide better quality and higher data rates. Okay. So it was, yeah, it should be put into the past tense now since we're really in 4G territory now, but it was envisaged to coexist with the 2G, 2.5G systems, but again would operate in a different spectrum and therefore you'd need different radio equipment. Okay. And so it kept the back end, it's sort of added a few more bits to the GSM GPRS architecture to cater for sort of a more data-centric view of the world, but kept that back end and changed the user interface. Okay, so the main component of this 3G standard is the air interface, and so basically it would have to come up to a certain rate and quality standard. And ITU sort of agreed a family of standards that was capable of delivering along, you know, at the data rates consistent with 3G services. Okay. So again, these 2.5G are, you know, built on top of the 2G system standards. Some of them did come up to that rate requirement. Others required, again, operation in the new spectrum. Okay.
And so, there were competing standards and there were still regional standards. Okay, so UMTS was basically a European standard for this new air interface. Other DECT is the digital telephone standard, but again, it has high data rates. So, and WiMAX, we have discussed WiMAX, yeah. So again, our broadband point-to-point delivery. Well, again, the whole focus of WiMAX was to get high data rates, so it does satisfy your 3G standards. Okay. And again, WiMAX was the first to propose, like, a piece of OFDM and MIMO. Most of the UMTS standards are CDMA based. Okay. So, again, the standards primarily revolve around their channel access methods, but they obviously have to cover all aspects of cellular telephony, so they have to have the whole architecture as well. Okay, so the basic idea of UMTS in terms of architecture was to build on what there was from GSM, GPRS, and so the core network from GSM and GPRS was maintained. Okay, so you had circuit and packet switching elements. You coexisted with your GSM GPRS, and you know, again, maintained all of those elements that we saw from the MSC to the packet handling elements. A media gateway was added, sort of additional to the GSM and GPRS components. And this media gateway was designed to handle what was then a fairly messy landscape for the media streaming. Okay, so it was meant to regularize the various transmission formats for media streams. Okay, the UTRAN, UMTS radio access network, replaced the BSC. And sort of has that same functionality. It provides access points, now called node Bs rather than BTSs, and then manages systems of these node Bs. Okay, and again, the end user equipment has the basic functionality that there was before, and SIMs to provide authentication. The primary difference for the user equipment, again, is going to be the radio system. And so, as usual, they tried to
tack on intelligence services as well. Okay, so again, this is just a graphical representation of that. Again, you see we have our users at the edge there interfacing. They're connecting with the node Bs, and then through the radio, the RNC, you access your back-end cellular services. And the core ones, again, are going to handle voice connectivity, packet data transfer, and, again, media streaming. Okay. And the others will all be handled separately by separate interfaces. Okay, there are also sort of broadcast messaging services possible. They'd be, they're handled by the CBC, but that's not sort of considered core to the network. Okay. So, again, you can see how this will, you need to change these interfaces here, but in terms of the back end, you can coexist with the existing GSM systems, because the back end is relatively unchanged. In terms of allocating resources, Again, the main difference now is that it's going to be possible to share channels between multiple users. And so we're going to have some way of multiplexing, sort of multiple data onto a single link, and of course then controlling all of that and allocating the resources. In order to facilitate this, we end up with a third intermediate type of channel. So we have our physical channels, the actual resources. We've got our logical channels, the type of data we want to send. But now we have transport channels. And again, the difference is that multiple logical channels can be multiplexed onto a single transport channel. Okay. So you can have sort of sub-channels within the channels. And so, again, if you see here, we have our logical channels, so we have certain sort of uniform types of data we'd be sending over these logical channels. This is packetized, so right, each time you want to send a message on the logical channel, you add some header information. But additionally, it's possible that we can multiplex sort of multiple pieces of information onto a single channel. So, for instance, here, these are very short pieces of information to send, so we can send several of them along a single physical channel. In order to do that, again, we've got to have some intermediate layer that defines sort of how that multiplexing is done. Okay, so we have the transport channels and the MAC layer, which is handling the translation from logical channels through transport channels. And then those transport channels are mapped onto the physical channels. So the bottom line is that the channel structure gets even more complicated than it was for GSM. Or even GPRS, where it was really pretty straightforward. You just had corresponding packets for all of the voice channels. Okay. So within UMTS, again, there were a number of competing air interfaces. One of the most common of them was WCDMA. And so, as you might expect, it's a CDMA-based air interface. And so, in terms of duplexing, so allowing for uplink and downlink, you could either use frequency or time division. And again, with the use of CDMA, you got quite respectable data rates.
At least respectable for the time.
Okay, so it used direct sequence spread spectrum and again improved spectral efficiency. Allowed the full spectrum to be used in all of the cells. So, this, again, it could lead to overt capacity and sort of additional benefits in terms of managing the capacity. Also, because we're using the full spectrum, you can accomplish soft handovers, so you can have connections to multiple base stations at the same time. Okay. You can use the coding within the spread spectrum to provide additional security as well, so it provides a form of signal encoding as well.
Okay, so that's an sort of a single example of how a system moved from 2G to 3G. This would have been the European take on how that happened. Within the U.S., again, there were other standards. Also, typically, in North America, also typically CDMA-based, but not compatible with the European standards. Okay. So, as it turns out, and again we've discussed this, there's again a limit to the gains we had using CDMA. And so, as we moved towards, as we sort of push ever onwards, move towards higher data rates, we see additional evolution or additional changes to the air interface. And again, we see a slow tidying up of the complexity of the back end of the cellular network.
Okay, so a lot of the goals for 4G did cycle around data rates and trying to get higher and higher data rates. So in order to do this, a lot of tricks were deployed in terms of the air interface, but also in channel bandwidth allocation. So you can now have channel allocation of different bandwidths, of smaller or greater bandwidths, depending on what you need. Okay. So your data rates go up by a significant amount. Now you want your goal is 100 megabits per second at high speed, a gigabit per second. While not moving, I'm not convinced that's really happened, but you want smooth handover across heterogeneous networks, so maybe moving from your cell to Wi-Fi, etc. Then that happens or not, or how perspective whether that happens or not is questionable. You'd like roaming over multiple networks. So you don't want it to be, you want users to be able to move not just within a country, but across the world. And, well, these data rates are nothing if you don't have applications for them. So you want to cater for quality of service for various applications. And what everybody really means by that is video streaming. That's various quality levels. What you need for video streaming is, again, to allocate sufficient resources. And we'd like to phase out the voice connected portion of the network as well. So voice is still transmitted, but it's done as an IP packet stream now. You don't need to have necessarily your circuit switch kind of thing. And again, the goal is always that all of our standards play nicely together. Okay. So again, 3GPP was responsible for UMTS. And it also proposes the evolution from UMTS to some 4G specification. And the proposal is what's called LTE, long-term evolution. Everybody knows LTE. And LTE is sort of specified in a large number of releases which just address various aspects of the standard, or that either evolutionary aspects or even within the standard improvements to the performance. Okay. LTE doesn't fully satisfy the 4G requirements. So, as the standard evolves, at some point we draw the line and go for what's called LTE Advanced. LTE Advanced does fully satisfy the 4G requirements. And so that's release 10 of LTE. So again, the main change is, again, the error interfaces is the main barrier to getting these high data rates is the radio connectivity. Okay. Ask yourself why, why is it different than sort of what you can get over your Wi-Fi at home? It's because of that last link. Okay, but again, we're also evolving the network. Okay. So, in terms of the back-end architecture, we have now system architecture evolution, which is evolving that UMTS core. It's simplifying it, it's easing out the voice connectivity aspects and concentrating on the packet access. Okay. Having said that, it still does allow for the coexistence of with the sort of legacy systems. Okay, so you know, what we see is that it's tidied up a good bit. We have now our evolved node Bs, so our node Bs turned into E node Bs. We have a mobility management entity, so that's separate because of the complexity of mobility management. We have a gateway, which is again moving you out to your IP networks. And so that would sort of be the core functionality. It supports the HSS is like your home, like the home location register, so it's support the, you sell the database for all the user data. And the PCRF is sort of the management function, so billing and stuff. And we see that, again, our gateway handles not only our LTE connectivity, but connectivity from our legacy and heterogeneous networks as well. Okay, so it is, it's tidied up the situation at least somewhat. Okay. So, it still uses the physical transport and logical channels. In a way, similar to UMTS. The improvement in data rates arise from a move away from, again, our CDMA-based systems to an OFDM/MIMO-based system. Over which we can, use various modulation schemes depending on the quality of our network and of our channel. Okay. So we can have a different, depending on, again, our modulation scheme, we get a different number of bits per signaling element.
Our basic signaling element is a frequency plus time block. So
an allocation frequency for a given period of time, which allows you to transmit a certain amount of data. Okay. So we can group a number of these blocks together to, again, give you greater data rates. And exactly what
your resource allocation is a matter of negotiation. Again, this is all on the downlink. So, again,
on the downlink, the system has control over all these resources. There's no contention. It can decide what to give you. Okay, so it'll do that on the basis of a negotiation. Okay, so again, resource elements are combined into blocks, and then you can be assigned multiple blocks. Okay, on the uplink, pre-coding is used to be able to distinguish between users. And you try and group your resources to optimize the control for the users. Okay. MIMO can be used to support multiple user access. Okay, so on the assumption that the user has less antennas than the receiver, than base station, you can, again, use MIMO to split your channels into sub-channels and distinguish the users along each of those sub-channels. Okay. So in terms of LTE, that's done to a fairly small scale, but that's increasing as time goes on. Okay. So to some extent, LTE Advanced is sort of more of the same. You're trying to improve your data rates primarily by making better use of MIMO, better use of OFDM, and aggregating your system resources efficiently. Okay. So, again, we keep increasing the MIMO in particular. We add more antennas, more channels. Again, we can aggregate carriers to increase the bandwidth the given user gets. And it can be either in a contiguous or a non-contiguous fashion. So you can give one big block, or you can sort of split it up according to resources. Just a few other tricks that are used. We try to be clever about maintaining access. And in particular, again, part of the issue is with the quality as you reach cell borders. So at cell borders, you're allowed to connect to multiple base stations. And so what this means is that along any given one of these, your channel is, not going to be necessarily a high data rate channel because it is at the edge, but you can combine multiple lower data rate channels to give you, again, maintain a relatively high data rate. Okay. Another improvement in terms of access is the use of relays. And so, in addition to just requiring a connection between
the user in the base station, but you can have an intermediate relay. So again, this can improve the access that a user will experience by moving, again, the access point closer to the user and then relaying it on back to the E-node B. Okay, and you know, again, there's from the user perspective, the relay should always be transparent, so the user shouldn't see it. But it's possible that either the system might be able to distinguish between a base station and a relay or not. Okay. So again, if you have you have this base station covering a cell, if you know that there's, for instance, an area of poor quality, whether it's within a building or shadowed by something, then you can use these relays to try and improve, again, the user-to-system connectivity. Okay, and that's good because I have a meeting at 11, but that's it. So, again, a very quick, really skim over points, sort of the high points about cellular evolution. If you're interested in reading more on any of the topics I have provided, links there, again, still at an overview level, but they provide you pointers then into more depth if you're interested. Okay, so that's it for today. In under a half hour, so about 20 minutes, Anderson should be over here. And so hopefully if you have any questions, if you can sort of get a lot of it addressed sort of in this session. So see you guys then next week.